that's why I've come from far away, to take away the blues. And I've come to say, I want to be more than just somebody. I want to be more than just a friend. I want to be more than someone special. A special friend, sometimes they won't understand.
Good morning and welcome to the A New Day Show. I am your host, Dynamic Daphne, also known as the Queen of the Empowered Soul, and I am broadcasting out of New Milford on this gorgeous summer day on the 17th of July. This is a non-traditional day because I am normally broadcasting on a Wednesday morning. However, tomorrow on the 18th of August, I'll have the distinct honor of accompanying some 30-plus students into New York City for a day of activities and excursions. So I decided to do the show one day early. Well, today's show is dedicated to you, my listeners. I decide that I want to hear your stories. And I know I have often sent out email requesting for guests to come on and to share their story, because I know we all have stories. We all have interesting journeys that we have traveled all our life. And as a matter of fact, some of us still traveling those journeys. So what I would like to do today is to encourage you, my listeners, to call in, and you can call 646-915-8166, or you can call 1-877-598-8549. And each story is important. So give us a call here in the studio. Share your story with us. You know, as much of the story as you want to tell us. And, you know, just explain to the world what keeps you still afloat. You know, some of us have been knocked down several times and we just get back up and we brush ourselves off as if nothing had happened. If you have that story or anything similar, it doesn't matter how small. You know, I was listening to on Monday I was listening to a CD by Brian Tracy, and one of the things Brian was saying is that a lot of times people do not claim the small successes, and they do not embrace the small successes. They are always looking for that one big break. And one of the things he said that was very interesting was that there is no success that goes from zero to high. It doesn't happen like that. And as I like to say, you have the beginning and you have the end. But all the important things and issues are the things that happened in the middle. And a lot of times we tend to summarize and abbreviate our stories. And we tell the struggles in the beginning and bam, we very quickly fast forward to the glorious ending. One thing I have come to realize and to understand is that the issues, the processes, the situation, the turmoils, and even sometimes the challenges and struggles in the middle between the beginning and the end, those are the things that will ignite the passion in other people. Those are the things that will help to awaken the entrepreneur within those people who are sitting kind of tracing their shadows. So let us make a commitment today not to shorten our stories, not to deprive people of hearing the entirety of our stories. Tell our stories. They are authentic, they are pure, and they are yours. So, with that being said, I encourage you to call me this morning. And you can call 646-915-8166. Or you can call 1-877-598-8549. And let us get into a conversation. You know, I must confess that I just began this month to read the Success magazine. Although I've been told it has been out for decades, this is my first time reading the magazine. And I'm saying, what a joy it is. What a pleasure it is to be a recipient of this, a recipient and a subscriber to this magazine. I think each and every one of us as entrepreneur need to subscribe to this, and so that we can be encouraged. You know, a lot of times when we are going through our stuff, we think that we are the only ones that are experiencing issues and situation. But as I look through the episodes and I look on the different stories of different people, Jacqueline Smith, you know, I looked at Zig Ziglar, I look at Craig Nelson and Brian Tracy and, you know, Magic Johnson, and everybody has a story. And a lot of times we tend to believe that some people have it easier than others do, but that's not true. We all have a journey that we must travel. Some of us, we will travel this journey in a more relaxed state of being. There are some of us, because we oftentimes resist change, we will start this journey with a little more reluctance and a little more tension. But As we travel the distance and as we continue on that path and as we become diligent as we become persistent to the call, as we become committed to the journey, even though we start out extremely reluctant, we come to the understanding that this is the call. This is what I am called to do. This has to be done by me. This cannot be done by anyone else because this was designed for me. It's like when we look on the job of an architect. The architect will design the building, then they pull in the engineers and they pull in all the different people that will help to make this design what it was designed to do. And it is the same thing with our calling and purpose and journey. We are called to do these things, and no one else, not your mother, not your spouse, not your siblings, not your best friend, nobody will be able to carry out those tasks if you renege from doing them. So I have devoted today's show to you, my listeners. And please call me and tell me, what's your story? What have you understand through the experiences of your story? How do you plan to use your life as you include your story as it unfolds to you? Call me. Let's talk about that. I know for me, each day, my story, I keep adding to my story and adding to my story and adding to my story. You know, I was in town a couple months ago, and I met an old friend, and we were talking. She's one of the journalists here at the local newspapers. And we were chatting, and she introduced me to someone else. And she said, you need to meet this woman. This woman has reinvented her life so many times. And I held on to what she said because you know something? That is a fact. I have reinvented my life a lot of times. And I will continue to reinvent my life, my career, my profession, as my journey unfolds. Because I remember growing up in Jamaica in the little district of Paintstown. You know, everyone there, now that I am on the outside looking in, and now that I am a female in my 60s, I can look back over those humble, yet valuable moments of growing up in that district. I recall the days when I would walk down, we live way up on top of the hill, or here you call them mountains. We live way up on the hill, and we had no paved roads, and we would walk the trails down. As a child, I walked barefooted. And I remember my mother giving me a wet piece of cloth because I only had one pair of shoes, and that shoe was for church. I would go to school barefooted. But that pair of shoes would, I would wear to church. And I would walk down the trails, and we would get down to the road now. And when I say we get down to the road, it's not paved road. It's road with cracked stones or gravel on there. And I'd put my shoes on and I would head to church. And the same thing happens. After church, you wear it back right to that spot. And you always stick the piece of wet cloth under some bushes. And you take that back up and you take the shoes off again and you take the socks off and you're up again up the trail to go back. And as I share this story, now, back then, I had no idea that we were poor. And it was because we were poor, that was the reason I only had one pair of shoes. Because as I look around me, at school, at church, at the marketplace, as I look around me, we were all alike. Our lifestyle was the same. We had loving and caring families. Material things did not get into the way of our upbringing. We saw people work on their crafts and their skills. We saw people embrace and support each other. I look at the farmers in the district who had to till the soil by hand with a pitchfork. And I look on all the farmers, they would pool their resources and they work each other's farm. I think I have spoke about this on a previous segment of the show some times ago. And that was the way that they got their labor done. Nobody had to pay, but they supported each other. And they would work one farm one week, and they would work another farm another week. And I think that was a real demonstration, and a genuine demonstration and illustration of what networking is all about. So I grew up in that kind of culture that supported me. And I am so thankful for that. It was just yesterday I visited a home in Woodbury, Connecticut. And as the family showed me around their home, I glimpsed outside, and there was a plant that my grandfather Edmund had on his property when I was growing up as a little child. I remember as a young girl, maybe 5 or 6 or 7 years old, going over to on Grandfather Edmund's house in Bronte. And I would be standing and gazing at this luxurious, we used to call it a trumpet flower. It had it's a tall tree, and the bloom is like a trumpet that you play. And I really don't know the botanical name for that plant. But yesterday, as I turn up in this yard, I look outside and I said, oh my heaven. I said, that's a trumpet flower plant. I said, I just went straight back home from just observing that through the window. I went back home to my grandfather Edmund's property as a child visiting him. And the lady was so kind. She was so generous. She said, come on out. And she took me outside. To my amazement, her property was landscaped with the most gorgeous botanical tropical garden. I was evident to see growing here in Connecticut a couple of castor oil plants. There were banana trees as tall as the house. I saw cactuses. There were so many luxurious tropical plants. I look at the leaf of life. I remember as a child, my mother always feed me the juice from the leaf of life whenever I would have a cold. And we spent about 30 minutes just walking and enjoying her garden. And you know something? I realized then and there how rich my childhood was. Someone who had not experienced those type of things growing up, they would go by there and to them, it would just be, oh, some greenery. It would not mean anything to them. But for me, laying there in my subconscious and deep down in my spirit was the richness of the experiences as a child from each and every one of those plants. I saw orange trees. I saw banana. I saw avocado. Many, 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 many tropical plants. And I know that this too has a role in my journey. Not sure what it is. However, I took the time to embrace that moment. I took the time to enjoy that moment and just to relive the times when I grew up and these plants were part of my life for 365 days a year. I am thankful because I told you how generous the lady is. She even took some pictures and she sent them to me. So I'll put them up on Facebook. And you, for those of you who might not know what the trumpet flower is, you will see that this one has a pink end where my grandfather Edmund was pure white. It was pure, 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 pure white. So yesterday was my first opportunity to see the one that has colors. So I wanted to share that as just one aspect of my story that I want to share with you. And you know, in the same magazine, in the Success magazine, as I read these different people's story, and I'm so thankful that they have published this magazine for us as entrepreneurs to have and to really know that we are not alone. There are a lot of resources out there for us and to help us. In here, there is a feature article on Jeremy Jacobs. And he has an amazing story because his father died when he was 23. When he was 28, his father died. And the headline they have on his story here, it says, "A passion for peanuts." And it says, by sticking with his strengths, Jeremy Jacobs raised his father's concession company to global heights. The father died unexpectedly, and this gentleman had to take over the peanut business. And not only did he take the business over, he has reinvented the business many times over. They are now the owners of the Boston Brewings. He's featured right there in their auditorium with his two sons, who is now part of the same business. So this is the time. I know there's a lot of talk about what the economy is doing and all of that, but let us harness our story. Let us learn our story. Let us know our story so that when we are called upon to share that story, let us put ourselves in a position to do that passionately. To do that in a way that it can help other people to evolve from where they are. There might be someone who is still in the valley of their story. However, if we can extend a hand to them by sharing our valley days when we too were in the valley of our story, until someone passed down a rope to us, and we grab onto that hope and even rope, and even though we slip and slide a couple times, then somebody else shove a ladder down in the pit of that valley. Now, not only did we have a rope, but we also had a ladder. And as we grab hold to the rope, and as we step on that ladder, one rung at a time, one rung at a time, one pull by the person on the rope, one rung at a time, one pull, one rung, one pull, one rung, one pull. And before we knew it, we were out of that valley. Because there were others who saw the good that was in us, and they decided to support us. And yes, there are people out there who will support us during our valley days. However, in order for us to attract those people, we first need to understand what we are about, believe in what we are about, invest in what we are about, and learn to share our stories with others. And as I read this the Jeremy Jacobs story, this gentleman is now in his 70s, and he grew this business. The one thing he said that was important, again, another thing he said that was important, that it doesn't matter of how we reinvent ourselves or our career. We should always remember to stay close to our core business. So in other words, when we reinvent, don't neglect the base. And I'll read a couple of things out of here. It says, Jeremy Jacobs took over his family's business at age 28. From there, he grew it into one, the largest, most successfully private held companies in the United States. Here's what he looks for when expanding a business. Do what you love. Where have we heard that before? More than anything, Jacob says, success is built upon a passion for what you do. If you are just in for the money, he says, you have set yourself up for failure. Look at the big picture. When the economy collapsed, Jacobs began to look for bargains, but not at the expense of his core business. Be prepared to snap up deals, but don't let a good price cloud your judgment. Next point of interest. Find like-minded people, Jacob says. Jacob looks for driven, competitive, thoughtful people who like to be challenged. But he also wants them to be invested in the business. If you can find people who like what you are doing, those are the people to put in place to give you the room to do the things you want to do, he says. Fourth point, don't bog down. Be aware of how your competitors function so you can rate where they are going, Jacob says. If you are too involved in the day-to-day, you won't see these competitive environments. Fifth point, tell it like it is. For better or worse, Jacob is known for speaking his mind. At least his people know where he stands on issues, he says. Final, be consistent. Be consistent. You need to be predictable. Predictable to those people who work for you. He advises. It helps them, gives them direction on where you are going. If you are not predictable, people have the tendency to operate with fear and not confidence. And those are solid advice that he has shared for us. I know it has helped me as I read it, and I'm sure that it will help you as well. The next story I want to share some highlights from is the story with Ken Deichwald. And he's sharing about live your purpose, how to tell when you're off track and how to get back on. So remember, call us at 646-915-8166 and tell me your story. Tell me what it is that you are about and what's going on in your life. In the meantime, I'm sharing highlights from the Success Magazine of a few people who have decided to share their stories to help us become better at what we are about. Yes, so Ken Deitchwall is a psychologist, gerontologist, and founder and CEO of AgeWave, a consulting and research firm on aging. He's the author of a bestseller book, AgeWave, The Challenge and Opportunities of the Aging Society. The most recent book, his most recent book, is A New Purpose, Redefining Money, Family, Work, Retirement, and Success. Deitchwald has shared his insight with numerous media outlets, including PBS, NPR, The New York Times, The Wall Street Journal, and USA Today. I want to welcome the people that join us in the chat room. And today's show is dedicated to you, my listeners. So call in 646-915-8166 or 877-598-8549. And let me hear your story and what's been going on in your life. Thank you for joining, and I hope you get something out of this show. Let me also ask you to let me know if you are hearing me, please. Yes, because sometimes my sound, I was told, was not going very well. All right, so yes, I'm going to go into the conversation here with Ken Deitchwall. And so this was done by Sandria Bynoski. And it says, this is a Q&A about success and how to live your purpose. The first note here, success. How do people know when their lives aren't aligned with their purpose? And Ken Deitchwald's answer to this question is, it's a little like one of those metal detector things you see people use on the beach. It starts to tickle, tickle, tickle when there is metal underneath. Most of us know when a relationship has run its course, or a job no longer satisfies. We look in the mirror, and that person looking back at us is not the best version of the person we could be creating. It is then a matter of finding what are the moments in your life when you have really felt on purpose? If you can understand what makes your heart sing and move elements of your life in that direction to bring it alive again, then you are moving toward your purpose. The next question. So, what does on purpose feels like? And Ken's reply. Purpose usually stirs for people when they got a terrific body of connection and relationship. Purpose happens when people feel like they are engaged in something that is really a good fit for their mind, body, skill, and aptitude. Even when other people don't agree, purpose also happens when people give back. The third question. Some success readers write to us and say they are unsure of their purpose. What's your advice to them? Each of us has to come to an understanding of who we are, our unique assets and appetites. What are your passions? And then craft a life and a society and a social network that allows you to feel like you are fully in the game. And it's tricky. It would be easy to pick up a menu of a purposeful lives and select one from columns A, B, and C. But if it is not what makes you happy, and you are still doing what your parents wanted you to do today, 20 or 40 years later, then there is a hollowness to that, a disconnect. People need to stop and ask themselves, what are the things I love to do in my life, and how can I do more of that? What are the kinds of activities I have judged to be a waste of time at the end of the day, and how do I get them out of my life? Next question. What are you saying people need to devote some time to deep thinking? Ken Dietrich. There are some of us who are analytical. I don't mean analytical in terms of stock pick. I mean in terms of sitting down, examining the Socrates, examining, like Socrates says, an unexamined life is not worth living. I am what I say. I meditate. I reflect, I speak to coaches, experts, and counselors. And I have really attempted to plumb the depth of life and self to discover what my path is. But frankly, with due respect to people like that, there are other people who are intuitive and move in the right direction for themselves, or who don't really need to figure it out in any grand way. They are just there doing it. Are there any outward signs that someone might be off track of their purpose? When you are young, there is a huge amount of attention that goes to making your parents proud or doing something you think will cause society to think highly of you. Trying to acquire signs of successes. Look at me. I have a house, 2 cars, and all the latest technology. I have fancy clothes and lots of jewelry. So I must be happy. But I am increasingly convinced that one grows up and begin to realize if you are not in sync or in deep connection with your own inner talents, inner drives, and unique capabilities as a human being, and if you are not with the person you really love, no matter how good it looks in public, you will never feel full of the inside. For the other people, you have talked to those whose lives got off course. What would be their advice to their younger self? I'd say there are probably 4 or 5 slices of advice. Be a little kinder. Kindness is all too often left out of the quotation, out of the equation of our lives. We live in a world that is so filled with competition, vitriol, and moodiness. A little kindness would make each of our lives better. Manage your time. Do the A's. We spend a lot of time doing the C's. Doing the not as significant, not so fulfilling, not so purposeful things, assuming we will get around to the important priorities, and often people do not go back to the A's of their list and hang them, stay on it. Keep your priorities straight. That requires a continual refreshing of what matters most to you and your family. Do it. There are so many people who just don't do it. Why don't you take the jump, make the decision, and pull the switch? Or else, before you know it, you are going to be on your deathbed. It's really what happens. If I know it sounds lucrous, because when you are young, you really do believe there is no end to your life. But that's not the way it turns out. Before you know it, you will be thinking, I only have 7 more summers to go. And you don't want to look back and ask, why didn't I do this? Why didn't I make that change? Why didn't I go to that workshop? Why didn't I read that book? Why didn't I go to the gym? Why didn't I do what could make me happy? More often than not, people know that their purpose might be, but don't necessarily have the courage or the drive to do it. Most people get stuck in the excursion. So, is it fear that gets people off purpose? Yes, change is hard. They are frightened. What if I start a new business and it doesn't work out? What if I go across the room and introduce myself to someone and they reject me? There's all this fear of what could go wrong. There needs to be an equal, if not slightly greater, appreciation for what could go right. There are all of those possibilities waiting for us. So, get your hand on your own rudder and steer your ship toward your own kind of bliss. Peace of mind or joy? It is an easy exercise, no. But it is ultimately the master game, yes. It is the truth. As we look over our lives and we look at all the various experiences, excuse me, let me get a drink of water. As we look over our different encounters in our lives, if we chose to be honest in our evaluation and assessment, we can know that all along we saw our purpose staring at us, and we have made the decision to divert and to go elsewhere and to do other things other than what the journey had directed us to. And as Dykewald said, it is a challenge. Change is difficult, but we just need to embrace it one step at a time and get the support that will help us to do that. I want to encourage you to call in. Let me hear from you. Share your stories. Share where you're at this time. Share what is going on. Last week, I shared the story of Coreda Harrington, the Bond Lady. This week, I'm sharing Dykewald's Live Your Purpose with you. And we all have stories. You know, I also mentioned from Jeremy Jacobs' family story and how he has built an empire by just sticking to the things that his father started off and just reinventing and believing in what he's doing. Now it has become second generation business, and you know it is so important. A lot of times we really don't have to go out and to create new things. There's a lot of times when we can spin off from what we are now doing. For example, I want to take this this portion and just to share with you one of the ways that I have decided to reinvent my company, my business, my career, and my life, and to add something of value, of additional value to what I am doing. And is the fact that 3 weeks ago, I became certified to be among a selected number of Dream Room facilitator by the Michael E. Gerber companies. Those of you who are not familiar with Michael E. Gerber, you should look him up on the internet. And he is the guru of the E-Myth. He is the granddaddy of E-Myth and the E-Myth Revisited. So I was fortunate enough to be among a selected few people who are the first facilitators for the dreaming room. And I'll tell you about what the dreaming room is. The dreaming room is a process and an experience that guides small business people and entrepreneurs or people who want to be entrepreneurs. The dreaming room is the process that guides them through the process and helps them to awaken the entrepreneur within and to help them to create extraordinary businesses. And I tell you, this is such a powerful experience because until I encountered this and I began reading some of the material there, my outlook on entrepreneurship was slightly cloudy. And I say that because those of us who are working in our businesses day in and day out, we are the cashier, we are the marketing person, we are the custodian, we work in the mail room, we are the salespeople, and you all know the 3,000 hats that we all wear. For those of us, myself included, who have been in that stage of our business, we are not entrepreneurs. Yes, we might own a business that we are working in. And what this this dreaming room experience will help us all to do is to become true, authentic entrepreneurs. So I'm excited about this new leg, if you may, that I have embraced to start. I'm looking to do my first dreaming room to start. It's a 12 weeks program, and I'm looking to start the end of September. The end of September, September 25th, is when I'm looking to do my first dreaming room. So for those of you who are interested in finding out more about it, give me a call. You can call me at 860-355-9838, or you can send me an email at drdaphne@visionweekendconference.com. Or you can send me an email at daphne@clarkhudson.com. Very soon, we are going to have the dreaming room information up on the Eagles Vision Media Group website. And we will be launching, hopefully, the end of the month. We will start launching so people can get familiarized and give you the information you needed to be part of this amazing journey and experience. I want for you to just encourage everyone to just tune into that. And again, we will have a DVD that you can watch. And I want to take an opportunity. I have not seen this person before, but I want to thank you, House of Miro, for joining the show. Please let me know whether my sound is okay. And this segment today is devoted and dedicated to you, for you to share your story. So give us a call at 646-915-8166 and share your stories with us. And help to change the world, see their valid days. Because I know that I have learned so much from the days when I'm in the valley. And that's a decision, because I could sit and weep and mourn about my valley days, but I decide I will take time to learn while those experiences are happening. I want to read again from the same book. I tell you something. I'm just having such a great time with this this Success Magazine. Now, I'm sure maybe some of you has watched Ellen DeGeneres' show. And she has something in here where she's saying inner truth. And she writes, if you have watched an episode of the Ellen DeGeneres show, you might have a hard time believing that Ellen DeGeneres has any trouble speaking her truth. The one time stand-up comic hosts her own daytime talk show, winning 29 Emmy Awards over 7 seasons, has taken over as a judge on American Idol, written 3 books, and became the newest face for CoverGirl. But she has done all of this in response to what she feels deep down is right for her at the moment. In her book, The Funny Thing Is, published by Simon and Schuster, she recommends pursuing happiness by spending time each day listen to yourself and discovering what's right for you. Try to have some quiet time every day, she writes. I know it's hard. Don't tell me. It's getting to be near impossible to find silence. What with the TV, radio, kids, leaf blowers, helicopters, traffic, birds, dogs barking, but try to put time aside to listen to you. It's easy to forget what you want, who you are with all the noise. Check in with you every day, or at least on New Year's Eve. DeGeneres, 52, spends an hour or more every morning practicing yoga, a path to find that inner quiet she requires. It's hard. But you have to make time to take care of yourself, she said. Recently, in a Shape magazine interview, only after you are taking care of yourself can you take care of other business. You have to ask yourself, what it is you need to do while you are here. We are all here to do something. And that is the truth, because, you know, especially as women, we get so busy and we keep rushing. And we neglect ourselves, shamefully to say. And it's not until crisis hits that we begin to look on our lives and say, I need to begin to do for me. I was speaking on Sunday night. I was on the phone speaking with a former co-worker of mine. And I have not seen this woman for a couple of years. And she sent me a request on Facebook. And she said, hi, Daphne, this is me, so-and-so. And I looked at the picture. I blew the picture up. You know, the pictures are all so tiny when they come. So I click on it and to make it larger. I still did not recognize who the lady was. And a couple weeks later, something happened, and the lady replied to a request I sent out. It was then that I realized who she was. And, you know, she said it with such excitement and joy. She said, God has removed from me 160 pounds. And, you know, she went in the story on the phone to tell me how they were expecting to have her in to do a double knee surgery. She had to be walking with a cane because her knees were so bad. And now she is enjoying life. It's like she's renewed, she revitalized. And we were talking about some personal stuff, and she said to me, I am okay with that. And for her to say that to me, I know that years ago, she would not have been saying those things. She said, I realize that I now need to go out and to look about me. I'm willing to enjoy my grandchildren, but I have to do for me. And the other people who are in my life, if they decide they want to be part of my life, then they will make the effort to be there. And that was a powerful statement. It comes a time when we all know our truth. We all know our truth. And we have to look in and be honest. Look on the inside, because we cannot camouflage. We cannot fool anyone. We can only fool ourselves. Because the things that we are looking to camouflage, and it really doesn't matter to people. So we don't need to do it for our mothers, our fathers, our spouses, our friends. Whatever we are doing, we just need to do it for ourselves. It is in the investment of ourselves that is what helps us to live the full life. This is what helps us to live joyfully. This is what helps us to embrace each and every moment in our lives. Because we all are so talented, we all are so gifted. But we get off course and off track when we start competing and comparing ourselves with others. Let us make a commitment to embrace our skills and talents. Let us embrace what we have, because we do not need anything else. God has given us everything that we need to have a full life. Everything. Everything that we need, He has given us. But we just get off track. And we keep chasing the wrong things that does not have anything to do with why we are here. We need to look in that mirror and have a heart-to-heart conversation with that person who is looking back at us. have a heart-to-heart conversation of how we decide to live our lives and how we can include this journey that we are on to enhance what we are doing, not only for ourselves, not only for our families, but for others. I want to also pick some things out of the world's greatest speaker and teacher and expert and guru and all the names and labels that you can find for this amazing gentleman. And I'm speaking of none other than John Maxwell. And he's speaking about living a useful life. All of us can look in the mirror and ask that question. What are we doing with this gift of life? What are we doing? Are we sitting in the recliner and walking and watching go away? Well, let us join John Maxwell now and see what he has to say about that. This question that we can all ask. What are we doing with this gift of life? When you are 80 years old, sitting in the porch rocking chair and reflecting on life, questions as, did I have a useful life, will come across your mind. There is no doubt this question will be important to you at 80. So it really should be important to you now. Unfortunately, a lot of people make a habit of postponing life. They think that somehow, some way, somewhere, at some time, life will get better. This rather poignant saying helps illustrate my point. First, I was dying to finish high school and start college. And then I was dying to finish college and start working. And then I was dying to marry and have children. Then I was dying for the children to grow old enough so I could return to work. Then I was dying to retire. And now I'm dying and suddenly realize I forgot to live. Isn't that powerful? Because I know we all can relate to this. Isabel Moore said, life is a one-way street. No matter how many detours you take, none of them leads back. And once you know and accept that, life becomes much simpler. I understand for some time that the only day I have is today. Even so, having a heart attack a few years ago crystallized that concept in my mind. Life is a one-way street, John Maxwell says. This isn't a dress rehearsal. It is a live performance. We need to take special care to live life, to live as a useful life starting now. So what does it mean to live a useful life for me? The usefulness of my life is determined by the relationships I form, the decisions I make, the experiences I encounter. The relationships I form, Relationships helps us define who we are and what we can become. More than almost anything else, relationships determine the kind of life you lead. In fact, most people can track their failures or successes back to pivotal relationships. Our relationships with others fall into one of four categories. Addition. Some relationships add to who you are. Two, subtraction. Some relationships take a little bit out of us. Multiplication. Some relationships can multiply our strengths, results, and contacts. Division. Some relationships can divide us. Think about the people in your life. Where do they fit into these categories? I'm sure it wouldn't take long to put names inside each category, right? Many of the sorrows we experience spring out of relationships with the wrong people. But it is also true that some of the greatest joys we experience in life develops as the result of our relationships with the right people. With that in mind, work to increase the time and energy you invest in the relationship that improve your life. And perhaps, above all, work and become a person who improves others' lives. The decision I make. Our decisions also determine usefulness of our lives. One of my favorite quotes on making decisions comes from the great John Wooden, who said, "Make each day your masterpiece." There are two ingredients necessary to make every day a masterpiece: decisions and discipline. Decision making takes care of goal setting, but discipline also takes care of goal getting. Decisions and discipline can't be separated. One is worthless without the other. I am committed to continual personal growth. I believe growth is happiness. It is essential. Out of my growth I live, and out of my growth I give. I will give and serve on the front end. Many of the blessings I enjoy today are a result of my decision. My wife Margaret and I make to try to live a life of giving with no strings attached. I will exhibit a great attitude regardless of the situation. Virginia Steer says, life is not the way it's supposed to be. It is the way it is. The way you cope with it is what makes it different. It's not the circumstances life deals us that determine our success or failure. It is us. It's our response to it. The experience I encounter Finally, the experience we encounter on a day-to-day basis impacts our ability to live a useful life. Joseph Campbell put it best. People say that what you are all seeking is meaning for life. I think that what we are seeking is an experience of being alive. Our experience determines how fulfilling our life is. And there are four realms to enjoy experience. Entertainment. Absorb experience through the sense. Educational participation of a person's mind and body, sometimes both. Escapist, completely involves in the person, like going to a theme park. Aesthetic, immersion in an environment, but not affecting it. Jim Gallimore was spot on when he said, "The richest and most compelling human experience draw from all four realms." If you are a leader or a communicator, ask yourself, when I'm communicating with or leading people, do I involve all four experiences? Final thoughts. If you are not doing something with your life, it don't matter how long it is, you are doing something with your life. It doesn't matter how long it is. If life does not consist of years lived, but it is useful if you are giving, loving, serving, helping, encouraging, and adding value. And as my friend Kobe says, energy to others, you have a useful life. You know, all these stories that I'm sharing here with you are just affirming what it is that we are all about. As I mentioned on the beginning of the show, that we all have a journey. We all have stories. I have stories. You have stories. What do we decide to do with those stories? Are we holding on to those stories? Are we hiding those stories, or are we telling them? You know, I am so excited that God has decided to put me on this radio that I can share the stories. I can share my stories. I can share stories about people that I have met. And each and every day as I go about my daily encounter, I am looking for stories. I speak with people regularly. And I want to know, tell me more, tell me more, tell me more, tell me more. Tell me more about what you are up to. Yes, I had to get a sip of water for that. You know, and there's so many amazing things that is happening in our world today. And we are not alone.
We are not alone. We are not alone. And we have to put ourselves out there, you know. Everything that we are going through or have gone through, somebody else have gone through the same thing. And we need to understand that. We have to understand that we are not alone and we are not unique in what we are doing. And we need to know that we can overcome and we can be successful in all aspects of what we are doing, so long as we do not isolate ourselves. There are people out there who is willing to support us. I know that in this little journey that I'm on, I have support from all over the world. I can get on Skype and I can talk to people wherever they are. They can share their ideas with me. They can help me in which to work on the projects that I'm working on. And it is such a blessing. I am thankful for that. I am so thankful for that. So I know that you have your stories and it might not be pleasant, but it is your story. It is that which will help to lift you up. Because as you share the stories and as you help others to heal, you too will begin to feel better. Better, better, better. So I want to encourage you to begin to share your stories. There's one more story here about the pickup artist turning feedback into small reinventions. Isn't this amazing? And let me read it verbatim for you. I've got this friend who thinks of himself as a pickup artist. No matter how you slice it, it's amazing to watch. Wherever we go, he engages the prettiest women around us. And just for the record, he's not super attractive. He's short and has a big nose. So don't think for a minute he's getting over because of his good looks. That's not what's at play here. Simply put, he tests women, waitresses, hostesses, women sitting innocently nearby. No one is immune. When one of his test questions backfires on him, he isn't deterred. It's just added information I use to refer any approach, he says. One evening, we are in a fancy restaurant in Midtown Manhattan. The waitress comes over and welcomes us. My friend turns and asks, "Have you ever met anyone as handsome as me with such a big nose? How handsome do you think I am?" She doesn't respond. He switches it up. "Let me guess," he says. "You are Lebanese and French, and you only date Jewish men." I try to rescue her. Ignore him. He's an idiot. that gets a smile from the waitress. So he alters his approach again. Don't you think it's rude on my mom to call me an idiot? No, I feel compelled to explain to the waitress that I'm not his mother, that I'm clearly younger than he is. Don't believe a word my mother says. Can't you see we share the same pointy chin? He asked. She chuckles. He sees an opening, or he just goes with the gush. I love Lebanese women, he says, but I feel bad that you are falling for such an ugly guy like me. She says he doesn't have to worry about that happening. But what actually transpires that evening is a very different story. By the end of the meal, he has coaxed her into talking about her dreams of becoming an actress. Her overbearing Lebanese mother, her dating saga, and her weekend plans. As promised, by the end of the meal, she has fallen for him. She thinks, I don't see her slip him her telephone number. My friend explains these techniques in one simple sentence. It's all recoverable, he explains. Every answer she gives, every facial expression, it is all just data. I didn't take any of it personally. I am learning what works and what doesn't work. And I'm constantly reinventing my approach so that I figure out what she'll like. Give me enough time and I'm available. Give me enough time and an available woman, and she will be mine. His key to success, reinvention. Everything you say is recoverable. Every misstep needs to be taken as information to be used in crafting your next attempt. The big nose line didn't work. Try the mom joke. If that gets you an eye roll, promise to behave. Pay attention and stay in the game. Life is a series of these seemingly small reinventions. Every experience you have provides you with feedback. If you allow it, this feedback can help you figure out how to get what you want. Of course, the real challenge comes when you get negative feedback. You tend to take negative feedback personally and as a reason to stop what you are doing. You respond emotionally and break down. That's not reinvention. That's growing up. The truth is that negative feedback is the most important information you can get. If you don't respond emotionally to setbacks or disinterest, then you can reinvent how you approach everything like my friend. But you have to keep forcing a reaction, paying attention, and reinventing your approach until you get what you want. Go ahead, admit it. You think I have pointed chin, but you love reading my column. This is amazing, you know. And thank her for sharing, Mel Robbins, thank you for sharing this. This is an amazing story because as we all look around us, there are things that's happening every day. And we as entrepreneurs, we can use that to better the way we do business. We can use that to better the way we build our bottom line. And we can always grow from these things. The next thing I want to share with you is the 1 minute negotiator strategies to reach better agreements. Even the most seasoned business professionals encounter negotiation scenarios that make them want to run for an antacid. Now it is a great time to reinvent how we view and conduct negotiations. Our decades of experience speaking, training, coaching, and participating in our negotiations led us on a journey to develop a model that would help people negotiate more successfully. Our intent is to not only reduce ulcers, but also to help people to enjoy the process. Why does the negotiation process stress people out so badly? Could it be that most people are ill-prepared for the process? We define a negotiation as the often ongoing process through which two or more parties whose positions are not necessarily consistent work to reach an agreement. Working with our client, we came to recognize that the fear of negotiating is so widespread that it has become an epidemic. If there is an epidemic, there must be a disease. We coined the term negotiophobia. The cause are widespread skill gaps in this critical area, along with a fear of resistance to conflict. The number one symptom is the fear of negotiating with a status quo approach. That result is less than optimal outcomes. This is usually the case, even when the situation calls for something else. Some people always try to play win-win. There are situations where this works, but a large percentage where it will not. Other people pride themselves in always being a competitive battler. This is not a good strategy when you run out of gas in the middle of the desert. And a tow truck comes by with a gas can. Unless you want to end up being a bizarre entity, you had best be somewhat agreeable. The 1 minute negotiator model gives you four alternatives, strategy to choose from in your quest for a desirable outcome. With this model, you can innovatively match the strategy to the situation rather than using a one-size-fits-all approach. Our metrics enables you to consider two aspects of each strategy alternative, who begins the discussion and cooperation, one's willingness to act. Once it is apparent that you are in the negotiation, it is imperative to know what your tendencies are and how others will like negotiate. The collaborators seek a win-win solution. The competitors pursue a win-lose. The accommodators will predict give in. The avoiders are reluctant to encourage, to engage. We also outline a simple three-step process that will help people reinvent the way they approach each negotiation and treat negotiphobia. We call this the easy process, as it consists of step one, engage. Recognize you are in a negotiation and quickly review the four strategies available. Assess, evaluate your tendencies to each of the negotiation strategies, as well as the tendencies of other sides. Strategize. Select the best strategy for this particular negotiation. Repeat your 1 minute drill. Each time you begin a negotiation, take a minute and conduct a review of the steps from 1 to 3. The best negotiators determine the most viable strategy for this negotiation. Adapt, recordly, and develop the skills to completely use all four of these strategies as the situation dictates. That's a very good, these are very good tools here, because a lot of times, you know, we start to negotiate and before the person say D or Dow, the next thing we know, some people say, oh, I will take such off. And, you know, you got to know what it is all about. So what they are giving us here are good insights. And this is from Don Hudson. And Don Hudson, and he's a speaker, trainer, and author of 11 books, including The 1 Minute Negotiator. And also George Lucas is an expert in marketing strategies and negotiating consulting. So here we are again. There you have it. There's one more thing I want to piggyback here. Building wealth, new decades, new directions. How your perspective may determine your prospects. There's nothing magic about entering a new decade. Yet, each tends to generate its own label. The roaring 20s, the depressing era of the 30s, the swinging 60s. In hindsight, we may even refer to the decade just finished as the terrible 2000s, or the naughty outs, because the stock market finished the decade exactly where it started. Each decade seems to carry its own signature in social trends, as well as economic forces that impact those social trends. In the past 10 years, we saw the twin stock market peaks of 2000 and 2008. Two bear markets and then substantial rebounds. It was a decade in which we learned to understand volatility. It perhaps but perhaps the past decade may just be remembered for an even more profound reason. Some call it the last great decade of prosperity. One economist labeled the coming decade the pouring of America, projecting that for the first time we will confront the possibility of declining lifestyles for future generations. I beg to disagree with this pessimistic outlook. Trends and times may change, but they always create opportunities in a great market economy, in a free market economy. It requires perspective to think beyond our current economic problems. That's the key to being successful in any economic conditions. I'm remembered of an interview I did in 1981 when the late A.N. Pritzker, founder of Hyatt and Pritzker Family Fortune. The interview took place as we were in the midst of another deep recession and double-digit unemployment and interest rates and general gloom. Ask how the family fortune was created. Mr. Pritzker told me that he started in the 1930s purchasing distressed properties when I naively protested. But that was the middle of the depression. He responded swiftly, "My dear, that's when the opportunities arise." I look back at his history teaches that when one door closes, another one always opens. Just think of what would have happened if our grandparents had given up on the country during the Depression, had stopped dreaming the America dream and working toward a better future for their children. So it's our job to start rebuilding the country we want instead of despairing about the problems that exist. That's the job of this generation. And it is a burden no greater than the ones carried on the shoulders of pioneers who settled in the West, or laborers whose factory jobs brought us out of depression. Yes, the pendulum is always swings far in time of crisis, but giving up on government or on the economic possibilities is not the answer. As long as we live our capitalist spirit alive and motivated us as part of our inherent nature, then we can work at creating our own success and move our nations back to growth. We will become exactly what we decide to be and have exactly what we want most. It's up to us to decide that we want prosperity and base our economic growth on that comes from a strong and balanced free enterprise system. We have done it before and we'll do it again, and that's the salvage truth. Oh, thanks. This is from Terry Salvage. She's also a columnist here in the Success Magazine. And we just want to be thankful. All of these stories and all of these excerpts that I have shared with you this morning is a truth that we can use to awake the entrepreneur within us. These are truths that we can use to reinvent our lives, our careers, and our business. I pray that you have gotten something out of today's segment and episodes. I pray that you will pass this on to others. I want to remind you to join the Vision Weekend Conference, September 2nd through the 4th. For more details, visit visionweekendconference.com. I appreciate each and every one of you, my listeners, whether you listen live, whether you join me in the chat room, or whether you're listening on the internet or on the archive. Please mark the show favorite, and you will be informed as to who will be on my show as guest. And remember, I'm always looking for stories to share. Let me have the opportunity and the privilege to help you share your stories to the world. I want to remind you to visit Eagles Vision Media Group and join our radio show there, EVMG Radio. And just let us know what this service is doing for you. We need to hear from you. Let us know some of the things that you are looking for. Remember, this is the time to reinvent what is happening. Don't look at the struggles and the valley moments in your life now as a setback. See it as a push forward. Step up, be bold. Open your mouths, begin to tell your story. And before you know it, there will be a lot of people there to embrace you and to take your hand. If you are still down in the valley, begin to repeat your story down in that valley. Tell your story to the universe. And before long, you will see a rope be tossed down for you to grab onto that security bar. Hold on as strong as you can. And when you think your feet are getting tired on your arms that you grab onto the pole with is getting weary, keep believing that someone will extend to you a ladder that will allow you to comfortably rise on each rung, step by step, half a step, by a full step, by half a step, by a full step, by a full step, by a full step. And before you know it, you will be above and you will be able to repeat your stories because you have been saying that story from you were in the valley. So remember that you do not have to settle for mediocrity. You have a story. Use that story to change the life of somebody else. I thank you for listening. And I encourage you to follow your destiny and live your dreams and impact the lives of people around the world. I love you and I thank you for your support.
What's the plight that you've called me to? The thing I'm set aside to do. I trust you, Lord, to see me through. Will you let me look in your heart? Going into a new dimension tonight.
You'll never ever see it again the same way. You'll never ever touch it again the same way. You've been called with a great call. It's a monumental call. You've been called to change nations and generations. Come on and praise your God.